relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom. Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka. Very special guest today, somebody who we've been trying so hard to get on the show. He's almost as hard as President Trump, but we got him. He is the chief political writer. Wow, what a great title. For Spiked Online, Brendan O'Neill, welcome to One on One.
Hi, Seb. Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're super, super excited to chat with you uninterrupted for the next hour. Let's start with one of your... I've just been following you on Instagram. You have a wonderful title. It's Burnt Oak Boy. Burnt the correct way with a T, not an E-D. Burnt Oak Boy. He could explain that to you when over a pint sometime. But your latest post on Instagram is something I missed, which I don't want to admit very often, but it is shocking in an age where we have pipelines exploding, maternity clinics being bombed in Ukraine. We have women being killed for removing their hijab in Iran. You'd think the phrase weapons of war would be pretty well defined. Well, not according to the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who had this to say at the United Nations. Pay attention to her definition of weapons of war.
I can certainly understand the desire to leave it to someone else. As leaders, we're rightly concerned that even the most light-touch approaches to disinformation could be misinterpreted as being hostile to the values of free speech that we value so highly. But while I cannot tell you today what the answer is to this challenge, I can say with complete certainty that we cannot ignore it. To do so poses an equal threat to the norms we all value. After all, how do you successfully end a war if people are led to believe the reason for its existence is not only legal but noble? How do you tackle climate change if people do not believe it exists? But we have an opportunity here to ensure that these particular weapons of war do not become an established part of warfare.
These weapons of war? You mean freedom of speech? That the mental gyrations required to start a speech saying freedom of speech is great, but then we have to get rid of it because it's a weapon of war. Brendan, you've been railing about this for years now. God bless you. Everything you write at Spiked Online, everything you discuss on your podcast. However, I am an American now, but I do have very pessimistic Hungarian blood in my veins. It seems as if things are getting worse before they're getting better. Talk to us about that speech fresh from the United Nations.
It was a shocking speech. So that's Jacinda Ardern, who is obviously the Prime Minister of New Zealand. She is every lovey's and small L liberal's favourite world leader. They absolutely fawn over her. They think she's the most virtuous, wonderful, honest politician on earth. I think she is the new face of authoritarianism. I think, and that speech in particular really did expose the iron fist that lurks in the velvet glove of wokeness, because this is a politician who goes around claiming to be very woke, very softly spoken, very caring, one of those new apparently female politicians that will save the world. And yet here she was at the UN making a speech that was incredibly, painfully illiberal. And the weapon of war she's talking about is online speech she doesn't like. She refers to it as misinformation or disinformation. But very often when politicians talk about those things, they're talking about dissenting speech. They're talking about ideas they disapprove of. They're talking about worldviews they don't like. And that's what she's really talking about when she talks about words on the internet that she thinks are like weapons and which the world needs to control more tightly. I found it a very creepy authoritarian speech.
And sadly, it's not just one speech at the United Nations or something coming out of New Zealand. We had here just a few months ago the Department of Homeland Security, which is supposed to stop terrorists, decide to create the Government Disinformation Board and have it headed by somebody who said the disinformation peddlers like the GOP, meaning the Republican Party. That's the kind of person they would want to put in place as the propaganda minister. All right, let's talk about you for a second, because we come from very different political sides of the aisle, let's say. I grew up under Maggie Thatcher. I love Maggie Thatcher. I live in the U.S. right now. I work for President Trump in the White House. But I find in your kindred spirit, and I've got to ask you, as a man of the left, if I'm permitted to say so, you must be in a very small tribe right now, because it seems as if the institutional left are very much in the, you know, Jacinda Ardern, government disinformation control, Orwellian ecosystem. What happened to the left? Because I thought the left were supposed to be the champions of freedom of speech. Tell us your journey. Let's talk about Brendan O'Neill, and let's talk about your political evolution. And what happened to you? Because I see reflections in Ronald Reagan, who was a Democrat and who said, I didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left me. So tell us a little bit about your story in Spiked Online.
Yeah, well, I completely agree with Ronald Reagan's line. I think I would apply that to myself as well, not in relation to the Democratic Party, of course, because I'm not in the US, but in relation to the left. I feel that I didn't leave the left. I feel that the left left me. And I know there are other people out there who feel similarly. And the way I saw the left, when I became a radical leftist when I was young, the reason I was drawn to the left is firstly because they did talk about freedom of speech. So if you go back to the 80s and the 90s in particular, which I have some memory of, it tended to be the kind of right-wing, more Christian section of politics that was in favor of censorship. And the left was generally quite countercultural, quite open-minded, and in favor of freedom. They've completely abandoned that. And now the left is at the forefront of cancel culture, the forefront of shutting people down. So they've abandoned their belief in freedom. The other thing that drew me to the left was their belief in progress, their belief in industrial progress, that mankind should exploit nature in order to create more wealth. Well, they've given up on that as well, and they've embraced the Malthusian politics of environmentalism, which says we need less progress, less industry, less growth. So they've ditched that policy too. And then, of course, the other thing I liked about the left was its universalism, its belief that people had a lot in common and we should focus on what we have in common rather than what separates us. But now they've gone down the rabbit hole of identity politics, where they're constantly talking about racial differences and the fact that white people can't understand black people and we should all stay in our lane and don't engage in cultural appropriation. So they've abandoned universal ideals as well. So all those things that drew me to the left, freedom, universalism, a belief that mankind should create more stuff so that people would be wealthier and happier, the left's given up on all of that. I haven't. I still hold on to those beliefs. And they call me right-wing for doing so. So that leaves me in a pretty confused position.
All right. Well, you're a warrior, and we very much enjoy everything you do at Spiked Online. Please listen to his podcast, the Brendan O'Neill podcast, and follow him at Burnt Oak Boy. He's wearing a very natty hat in his Instagram profile. It says, make women great again or something like that. I love it, from our friend Posey Parker. Have you put any thought to how that happened? How did the left, that were, you know, burning bras and building barricades for, you know, freedom and whatever in the 60s, how they became the censorious, there will be no progress, we're going to control information? Is it because the revolutionaries left the campuses and became the ministers, became the establishment, became the editors? What was the key to that 180-degree reversal, Brendan, in your opinion?
I think fundamentally the left lost faith in ordinary people. And I think there were two great periods in which that happened. The first was in the 1960s. when the left became much more culturally inclined. So it gave up on questions of class and questions about the economy and questions about production, which is what the left had been concerned with for 100 years before that. And in the 60s, it became much more about cultural issues, the evils of advertising and consumer society and the brain-dead masses going to work every day like a bunch of idiots. So the left shifted towards a cultural critique of mass society. And as a consequence, they lost faith in the masses, who they saw as being a bit brainwashed and a bit stupid. And then again in the 1980s, I think there was another a development in the left's break with ordinary people, because, of course, the right was being successful across much of the Western world, particularly in the UK with Thatcher and in the US with Reagan. And that's really the time that the left loses faith in democracy and starts looking for other ways to effect change, whether through the judicial wing or through the European Union. In Britain's case, they looked for ways outside of democracy to circumvent democracy in order to make things happen that they would like to see happen. Wow. So in the 60s and the 80s, there was a massive shift of the left away from ordinary people and towards state structures, and they started to distrust us. And in the process, they gave up on the idea of freedom, I think.
I love that. I think there's something to that. I haven't heard that said as trenchantly before, that they fell out of love with the thing they were defending and they weren't interested in protecting democracy anymore. That's why he is the chief political writer for Spiked Online. I'm Sebastian Gorka. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe to ours as well. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Never miss an episode. It's absolutely free. Do leave us a 5-star review. It helps with those dastardly algorithms, and share the links with your friends. And don't forget all the amazing merchandise. If you believe in America First, go to sebgorkastore.com. That's SEBGORKA. Every item made in America, nothing made in China. That's SEBGORKA store.com.
In 2015, I tried to commit suicide. I tried to take my own life. I took a bunch of pills and tried to drive off a cliff. By 2023, we will have more deaths by suicide than we will post 9/11 combat.
Babe is referring to a report out just this summer that estimates that since 9/11, we've lost more active duty personnel and veterans to suicide than those actually killed in combat.
Are you shocked by what you just heard? An American combat veteran who considered suicide and then gave you the figures. In combat, in the last 21 years, 7,000 have died on the battlefield. More than 30,000 have committed suicide after they came home. It's just wrong. 22 veterans every single day. We need to get that number down to as close as zero as possible. Help them defeat those creatures, those internal demons they're fighting. There's one organization that's helping them, founded by combat veterans. It's called Mighty Oaks. They have a series of ranches across America where combat veterans who have left the service and some who are still active duty can go with their families for some tranquility and an opportunity in a faith-based environment to try and defeat those demons. Please support this amazing organization. If you want to give back to those who have given so much to us, who have stood on the wall to keep us safe, this is a perfect way to do it. Each trip costs $2,500. The veterans pay not a penny, not in travel, not in accommodation, but we need your support. Please go to my website, sebgorka.com, and click on the Restore Our Warriors banner. It's a blessed thing you're doing. They've done so much for us. Now it's our turn. That's SEBGORKA, sebgorka.com, and the Restore Our Warriors banner at the top. There's a story, Brendan, that kind of died far too rapidly. You managed to, get the defibrillator paddles on the chest of this story and reinvigorate it. And this is the amazing interview our buddies, Constantin Kissin and Francis Foster of the Trigonometry podcast did with another lovey of the left, the darling, what is it, the dark rider of the secular apocalypse, Sam Harris, one of the four, who gave an interview where we got to kind of peek behind the curtain of what the champions of the left believe. Here's the first cut from none other than Sam Harris on the Trigonometry podcast, cut two.
And we cannot afford to have four more years with this guy, right? And so what should well-intentioned people do who have a lot of power in these various ways. You know, you're running the New York Times, you're running CNN, you're running Twitter. What should they conspire to do? We're going to open up this laptop from hell, and the news cycle for who knows how long is going to be just conceivably a nuclear bomb of an October surprise. And we're going to get four more years of Trump if we actually give this a fair hearing.
So the first sentence and the last sentence are the bombshells there. Nobody actually focused on that cut. They focused on the dead bodies. If Hunter Biden had dead bodies in his basement of children, I wouldn't care. I think that cut is more important. You've written a superb piece. I'm going to post it again right now. Sam Harris, religious fundamentalist. But the first sentence he says is, we cannot afford to have four more years of Trump. Who's the we and who gave him a mandate? And at the end, he said, we cannot afford to give this information a fair hearing. I mean, how chilling is that, Brendan?
That is incredibly chilling, because what he's essentially saying is, I support the suppression of information that I don't like. I support the suppression of stories that are inconvenient for politicians who I approve of and which might damage Joe Biden in particular. So clearly he's talking about the Hunter Biden laptop story, the fact that the New York Post blew it up just before the 2020 presidential election. And he said he was in favor, Sam Harris said he was in favor of social media's suppression of that story and the fact that the prestige media like the New York Times and CNN didn't cover it and said it was a non-event. It's really incredible to hear Sam Harris be open about this. This is a guy who poses as a secularist, the one of the best known secularists in the world. He thinks religion is regressive and backward and too dogmatic. And there he is being dogmatic himself and saying that his dogmatic belief that Trump would be a second Trump term would be awful. That should take precedence over our ability to know the truth about this particular story. I found it incredibly chilling that someone would so openly defend Silicon Valley's suppression of a very interesting thing people had the right to know about.
Yeah, I don't want to be, and nobody's ever accused me of being an intellectual snob, but I have to make one additional observation. But you've got to read Brendan's piece. This is a man who's famous for one thing, saying that he's rational, that emotions must not drive your decisions, and that's why I am an ardent secularist, an ardent atheist. And this whole interview is him using fake rationale to justify his emotional hatred of one person, is it not?
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And, you said earlier that we got a peek behind the curtain at what he is like, and that is exactly what happened in that interview. I think he exposed just how authoritarian his instincts really are. I think it's a good example of what is referred to as Trump derangement syndrome. I know that's become a slightly overused phrase, but it's actually quite accurate to describe some people's view of Trump as the worst thing that's ever happened in Western political life. I mean, they really went completely overboard in their criticisms of Trump, and they saw him almost as evil, as a new Hitler. They became hysterical in the way that they talked about him. And that's another striking thing about the Sam Harris interview. He talks about Trump almost as if he's a demonic figure, a devil-like figure. And this is a guy who's supposed to be rational, who's supposed to be a secularist, but he clearly believes Trump is evil and that any means are justified to silence a story that might benefit Trump. He came off as very irrational and very authoritarian.
He actually compares the man elected by 74 million Americans to an asteroid that's going to destroy the Earth. It's not very cold and calculated and rational.
No, absolutely not. That was a very good example of how far the anti-Trump hysteria can go. You know, an asteroid hitting the Earth would destroy life as we know it. A second Trump term would not have done that. You know, let's just be very clear about this. But this is the view they have. They have this Armageddon-like view, which is also a quite religious view, ironically, for Sam Harris. They have this view that the end of days are just around the corner, and if we have another Trump, or if Boris Johnson were to come back, or the fact that we've now got Giorgia Meloni in Italy, they really do see all of these elected politicians, democratically elected, they see them as harbingers of doom, of the end of the world. And that's just irrational, it's anti-democratic, and we need to get political debate back onto a reasoned plane.
I don't know whether it was Augustine or Thomas Aquinas, but one of the great theologians said, if you try and deny the existence of God, you will leave a God-shaped hole in the soul. And that's what these people have filled their God-shaped hole with, whether it's apocalyptic environmentalism or saying Donald Trump is a killer asteroid. We're talking to Brendan O'Neill. He's chief political writer for Spiked Online. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One. We are on all social media except the fascistic YouTube. So follow us, whether it's Truth Social, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Rumble, and of course, Spotify. Make sure you're following us so you never miss a nanosecond of our show. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to mypillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or mypillow.com, code Gorka. If you enjoy America First, don't forget, this isn't NPR, this isn't public radio. We don't get cash handouts from the taxpayer to the tune of $500 million a year. This is a free market enterprise. Support those who make our shows possible. Great Americans, great patriots like Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, the pillow that never gets hot, never loses shape. More than 51 million sold. The left have tried to cancel him everywhere. Now Walmart, because he's a conservative, have canceled his goods. Go directly to mypillow.com. Use my name, G-O-R-K-A, for up to 66% off. And he's got some amazing buy one, get one free offers as well. You can call them 800-829-8468 or just go to mypillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. Get a good night's sleep and support a great patriot as well. Now, let me play you one more clip from Sam Harris, and then I want to break down, who does this represent? Does it represent the elite, or does it represent a broader left-wing voting base? This is the first cut we prepared today. Play cut.
And, you know, Hillary Clinton, for all of her flaws, was not worse than Trump. Joe Biden, we could have known Joe Biden was going to just be comatose in office. Not worse than Trump, right? Kamala Harris, not worth, like it's all, and again, it's not just a marginal call. It's just, these are people who are normal politicians who are so much more constrained by predictable machinery, right? There's such less of an opportunity there to destroy institutions that we have to rely on. Right. With any of those people in charge, including a random person in charge.
So the expressions on Francis and Constantine's faces is perhaps the most enjoyable part of that creepy interview. So just those phrases there, that Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden are the normal ones who are constrained by institutions they don't wish to destroy. For me, if you read between the lines, Brendan, they're the people that keep the elite in power. That's why I like them. And the institutions are protecting me and giving me my credentials. Therefore, I can't have Donald Trump. Am I reading too much into that?
No, not at all. I think that's right. I think a lot of these people, including Sam Harris, are really only interested in defending the status quo. Yeah. And it's a status quo that they benefit from enormously. I'm sure he's well connected. I'm sure he moves in certain circles. He benefits from the old establishment and the way that it does politics and the ideas that it pushes into the public realm. Well, bully for him. But there are millions of people out there in the United States who felt completely and utterly disrespected and cut off by that old establishment, which is now back in power, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, let's not forget that You had Hillary Clinton referring to some Trump voters as a basket of deplorables. You know,
just last week she said they were raising their hands like Nazis at a rally. I mean, as she's wearing a black leather jacket, not a good look. But here's my question for you, because I think the phenomena of the rejection of the elite is a transatlantic one. You look at Brexit, you look at Maloney, you look at President Trump. Is the attitude we just witnessed in those two cuts, Brendan, is it just the elite? Is it just the urban elite? Or do left-wing voters actually believe this kind of garbage as well?
I think a lot of left-wing voters do believe it. And wow. Britain is a good example, because the fight we had over Brexit was just extraordinary. And Brexit was really one of the earliest expressions of populism. We're seeing a lot of democratic populism around the world. I think Maloney's part of that. Trump was part of that. What's happened in Sweden recently with a very big vote for the Sweden Democrats was part of that too. Brexit was an early expression of it. And I was really shocked by how many people in the elites and how many left-wing voters I know were saying, let's stop Brexit from happening. This was the largest Democratic vote in the history of the United Kingdom. Yeah. More people voted for Brexit than have ever voted for anything in this country since we got the franchise. And yet they wanted to prevent it from happening. So when I saw Sam Harris speaking in that anti-democratic authoritarian way, it did make me think of the elite's war on Brexit and their determination to stop populism in its tracks. I think populism is a good thing because it's ordinary people holding the old establishment to account and saying we want our interests represented for a change.
Yeah, the way that they've managed to make the word populism pejorative, populism means it's popular. I thought that's the kind of point of representative democracy. It's absolutely astounding. That's why he's Brendan O'Neill. We're going to talk about his next article, The Tyranny of Pride, in a moment. But first, let's pay the rent. This is America First One-on-One, coming to you live from the ReliefFactor.com studios, just outside the insalubrious, fetid, malodorous swamp that is Washington, D.C. If you're in daily pain, if you've tried everything else and failed to find relief, please try this 100% drug-free product that is liberating 500,000 Americans from their daily pain, me included. But it's not just me. It's people like Reggie from Florida. This is Reggie's story. I have a lot of pain from aging, and after only 4 days of using Relief Factor, I'm already experiencing less pain and stiffness. Can't wait to see how I feel in a couple more weeks. Relief Factor is a blessing sent by God. Incredible words. Find out for yourself. There's only one way, but it's super easy. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Reggie, and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. Call 800-500-8384 or just go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. All right, let's have a little bit of fun. This is from another one of your Instagram posts. It is Burnt Oak Boy. That is the Instagram pseudonym for our guest, Brendan O'Neill. It has to do with a certain Canadian teacher who has a certain proclivity. Let's put this article up on the screen, please. So this is Kyla Lemieux, who... Well, I don't know. What's the latest analysis, Brendan O'Neill? So we have this video of this man in a very bad, ill-fitting wig with kind of cartoonish prosthetic breasts that reach down to his waist. The latest news here in America is that this is a punking. This is a stunt. This is a person who had issues with the regime in his school for not being politically correct, and this is his defense mechanism? Or do you just think he's a pervert? Anyway, what are the big stories or the conclusions we draw from this very, very peculiar story north of our border?
Well, I've seen that report too, that it might be him being anti-woke. He might be gaming the system and trying to expose how ridiculous the transgender ideology has become and how ridiculous wokeness has become. So let's wait and see. That does seem to have come from just one anonymous post on 4chan. So I am skeptical, but we'll wait and see. But either way, whether he really is a perverted bloke who gets some kind of weird thrill from walking around with huge prosthetic breasts, or if he's gaming the system, the key point still stands, which is that our institutions have lost the plot. Yeah. And that includes schools. Schools have become so corrupted by the woke ideology and by the ideas of transgenderism in particular, that they would allow a teacher like this to carry on teaching. They do teach the craziest stuff about gender to young, impressionable kids. They tell them that sex and gender are unrelated, and that you can change your sex, and that you can be a they them if you don't feel like a girl or a boy. They are pumping kids in schools across the Western world now with this very dangerous ideology. So I think the key part of this story, he might be joking or he might be serious, but the real important thing is that the school defended him yes. on the basis of his rights to gender expression. And I think our schools and other institutions have become so corroded by the new ideologies that they've lost the ability to make any kind of moral judgment.
Yeah, well, there's big news in the UK with the closing down of the Tavistock Institute that was the hub of the transgender surgery, especially for minors in the UK. But you've written a piece called The Tyranny of Pride, and you actually say the tyranny of the pride movement. Talk to us about how... Well, let me give you my take. There's some very interesting things happening with a kind of breakage, a fracture between the old gay rights movement and the aggressive transgenderism. You can, you know, chemically castrate a 12-year-old boy and it's great. But also there is the institutional creep, as you said, of these insane policies into government. I think this will be a key red pill moment for many people who are apolitical or independent, who say, hang on, what is my local public school teaching that you know, my child can transition and it's kept a secret from me? Here in the county where I live, Brendan, the local school board, this is the richest county in America, Fairfax County, just decided if a kindergartner misgenders their fellow student, they can be suspended. A kindergartner, okay? So do you think that there will be increasing fractures on the left within this extremist movement? And also, do you think that this could be the kind of Damascene moment for a lot of people who wake up and say, hey, this isn't crazy?
I really hope so. I think that's already starting to happen. I think this could be the flashpoint issue yeah. for lots of voters and for lots of ordinary people who've had enough of where society seems to be going. I think there are politicians in the US who are being very interesting on these kinds of issues, like Ron DeSantis, Glenn Youngkin. I think the good thing about politicians like that is that they recognize people feel exhausted and beaten down by the left's culture war, particularly in schools, and they want to stand up for their kids, stand up for normal education, and stand up for the ideas like biological sex and the fact that there are boys and girls and men and women, and that's really all about that's it, really. So some politicians are starting to really, I think, use these issues in a very clever way to try and create a new discussion in political life. And I hope that happens in the UK as well. And you're right, there is a huge fissure is opening up on the left as well. So you have the old gay rights movement from the 70s and the 80s who feel very uncomfortable with the politics of transgenderism in particular, because they see it in some ways as being homophobic. They see it as a form of woke homophobia, the idea that a man can be a lesbian, for example, and that a man can go into a lesbian-only space.
I really don't want to go down this rabbit warren too much, but there's this idea that a large proportion of the young boys who are being transitioned would actually end up just being gay men, and they see yeah. this as an assault on their gay culture.
Absolutely. And what they see it as conversion therapy. This is the great irony of the trans movement. It does look like a modern form, a secular form of conversion therapy. So young boys who probably would become gay are often being transed into being female. And lots of young lesbians now are binding their breasts, or they're having top surgery at a young age, and they're taking hormones and growing moustaches, and their voices are deepening. You know, the idea of, well, if you you're a lesbian and you, or a tomboy, then you should be turned into a man. And I think the gay rights movement finds that quite repulsive as well. It's almost like we are medically correcting young people who are simply effeminate boys or masculine girls. You know, there is a country out there which I think it has the second highest number of trans operations in the world, which is Iran. And the reason Iran has so many trans operations is because it is a homophobic country. And it would rather that a gay man became a woman rather than he was living as a gay man. So the fact that some of that ideology is being brought into the West, that should worry people, I think, who believe in freedom and equality.
Which really shines a light on why this is happening. It has nothing to do with the Hippocratic Oath or health care. It is treating human beings as tools of an ideology. I am, you know, using chemicals or surgery on a child to fit my ideological needs, whether I'm a mullah in Iran or whether I'm an aggressive trans person here in the United States. Superb stuff. As we spoke about Glenn Youngkin and Ron DeSantis and others, if you want to see just how insane the left have become, look at their reaction to what Patriot Mobile have done by supporting conservative candidates in school board races across Texas. It is the only Christian conservative cell phone company in America, and they're on your side. Don't go with the big cell phone providers. They have donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to causes you don't believe in, against the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the sanctity of life. Join the good guys. Join Patriot Mobile today. They have plans to fit every budget, the same nationwide coverage. Use my name to get free activation, special discounts for veterans and first responders. Call 972-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/Gorka. That's 972-PATRIOT, patriotmobile.com/GORKA. All right, last question, big picture question for you, Brendan. I know you can handle it. In the last 15 years, yeah, let's go 10, 15 years. So let's go Brexit, Trump, then what's happening in, you know, Sweden, in Italy. There seems to be a short span cycle, a trend line, whereby the people, and I'm not, this is not a Marxist analysis, it's just a political analysis, the people reject the elites, whatever format they come in, and say, okay, enough. I'm a Labour voter from the North, and I'm going to vote for Brexit. Screw Labour. And then in comes Brexit, in comes Donald Trump, in comes Orban. And then there is a counter. There's the 2020 election here in America with all of its massive, massive problems. In the UK, as somebody born in the UK, I was horrified to see the whole establishment try to sabotage Brexit for nigh on 4 years. The House of Commons, the Lords, billionaire lawyers, the media, you name it, just say, no, forget the people. Who cares about the people? And then it swings back. Are we locked into this perpetual cycle of a punch and a defense and a punch and defense? Or do you feel optimistic that the writ of the people is gaining more momentum than the elite? How do you look at the future?
That's a really good question. And I think we probably will be locked into that cycle of conflict for the foreseeable future. But I think one of the ironies of populism is that it is a way for ordinary people to make their voices heard and to put themselves on the agenda. But at the same time, it has the effect of galvanizing the elites, and it makes the elites realize that they need to get their act together. You know, we are ruled by elites that are, in my view, not very competent. They don't have very strong beliefs, certainly not beliefs that I would share. They're somewhat all over the place. But what's happened since the populist explosion over the past 6 or 7 years is that they have realized they need to get their act together. And the way you describe the elites' attempted clampdown on Brexit is very accurate. They really did pull together to try to prevent ordinary people, pesky ordinary people, from having their political say. So we are going to see that tension, I think, between the elites and the people, which is why it's so important, I think, to keep pushing the populist argument, to keep saying that ordinary people's views should be represented, that they should be represented in schools, in the workplace, and in politics. Had enough of being ruled by elites who are incompetent and regressive and are pushing ideologies that are damaging to society. So the populist revolt against that certainly needs to continue.
I think that first adjective is very, very important. The good news is the people we're struggling with, wrestling with, are, for the most part, very incompetent. This is not an impressive bunch. Now, that's bad news if you're the president of the United States and you've got 4,000 nuclear missiles. But at the end of the day, if you're an incompetent, you're an incompetent and you can be defeated. And the will of the people will prevail. In the meantime, educate yourself, stay informed, follow this man on Instagram, Burnt Oak Boy. Listen to his podcast, Brendan O'Neill, and check out Spiked Online. I'm Sebastian Gorka. You've been listening to America First One-on-One, wherever you are. Keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take. But as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
All of our partners, oh my God, such an unbelievable moment.
Brandon, you also told me you can hear the chants from the crowd. Let's go, Brandon. You told me you were going to...
Let's go, Brandon. Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to America First. Why are we playing that? Because it's great, because it's fun. It's also the first anniversary of the chant of Let's Go Brandon. Was she punking us? We'll never know whether she was, but she played it very, very smoothly. And what has happened to you in the last year as Brandon is in the Oval Office? Well, you could call us. The number here, 833-33-GORKA. That's 833-334-6752. But first, it's not quite an anniversary. But it is another event that seems to resonate with lots of you. As I travel the country, as I respond to DMs and comments, and don't worry, we will be getting to the big news of the day as well. Ukraine wants to join NATO. Really? You're an active war zone. You just lost some provinces to an invader. We'll dissect all of that and much more. But let's talk about an event that, strangely, you relate to. It happened quite a few years ago when I was invited to the White House by my old boss for something called the Social Media Summit, a group of about 300. I hate that word. I don't know what that means. You've got lots of followers on social media. I don't know. I think, you know, Plato is probably still a bigger influencer than anybody, Kim Kardashian included. So I don't think social media accounts by themselves mean that you are influential. But anyway, a few hundred conservatives with large audiences, let's say that, were invited to meet the president and to have a kind of closed room Q&A on the future of social media and how we're going to deal with things such as the censorship of conservatives and the cancellation of conservatives. The man who was hosting us would eventually have his Twitter account, amongst others, deleted. That account alone had more than 90 million followers. So the discussion was very justified. After the summit, a few of us, I think maybe less than 100, were invited into the Rose Garden, where we witnessed the president and the attorney general give a short press conference on another issue of national import, after which the president left the podium with the AG And a man called Brian Carem hurled an insult, asked a rude question of the there he is, shouting at the president. And in the literal sense of the word, I was triggered. I think you can see just to the left there, I think that might be Jim Hansen, who recorded the ensuing incident in its entirety. I am going to repost the tweet so you can see all of it in its entirety. But he was rude to the president, and then he stepped over the velvet rope, which you're not allowed to do, Brian. I think he was very miffed that we were the guests of the president, and he wasn't, despite the fact that he was, quote-unquote, the playboy. The Playboy and CNN White House correspondent. Not a joke, as Sleepy Joe would say, not a joke. He was the Biden and the... He was the Biden. He was the Playboy and CNN correspondent for the White House. And he stepped over the velvet rope, and in a weird, I don't know, projection or something, he stretched open his arms and he said, I've never seen a group of people more ready for demonic possession than this one. Strange phrase to use. I know. Maybe he's projecting a little bit. At which point, I recognized who he was. I recognized him as the... better control my words here. As the oxygen thief who had persistently insulted and harassed my friend, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, when she was the press secretary. So that was it. I was triggered. I jumped up from my seat. I turned around and walked straight up to him, and I started to call him what he was, a punk. This is all caught on camera. Not a journalist, but an oxygen thief. To which this sad little drunkard, I think he's... there's another buddy of mine, Jake Turks, standing on the left there, if you're looking at our video stream. To which Brian Carem, so strangely... in front of hundreds of witnesses, the White House press corps, and the Secret Service agent standing next to him who did nothing, challenged me to a fight. He asked me to come outside to settle things. Very strange, very strange. And then he shouted at me, get a job, Gawker, or go home. Because I'm an immigrant, I guess. He's a Democrat, so immigrants should go home because he's a racist. And he said, get a job, which is weird because... I had multiple jobs back then, and I still do now. Brian Carem currently is unemployed. He was actually fired by CNN and Playboy. Wasn't the first time. I looked him up earlier today. He had been fired earlier from UPI, I think, because of he insulted President Bush. So this guy has a track record for being a little bit bipolar. Why am I talking about all of this? Because wherever I go, people bring it up. They say, that thing that happened in the Rose Garden, that was cool. Why? I'm not a presidential historian. We should probably ask Conrad Black, who is. But I think that's probably the first time ever two people came close to fisticuffs in the Rose Garden, literally 40 feet from the Oval. I don't think that's the big deal. I think this is the big deal. And it was illuminated for me by my muse, my wife, Katie. That incident, that event, resonates with so many of you because you're fed up, because you've had it. You've had it with the Marquess of Queensbury rules, that conservatives just have to take it, suck it up, and ignore it. And I didn't. I'm just not good at that. I'm no Hercules. I'm no, you know, warrior. The most fun I've ever had in a uniform is just a few years in the British Territorial Army. But when I see something that's wrong, even if it's in public, I'm prepared to call it out. Like that ass of a quote-unquote man, Brian Carem, K-A-R-E-M. We've had enough. And they're worried. Because millions of us have had enough. It's time for our voices to be heard. It's time for you to step up to the plate. Not to keep your head down, like in a socialist communist regime, just play safe. Don't get in trouble. Because if we don't take back this nation, one little show of bravery at a time, one school board meeting at a time, nobody else will. It's that the math of it is very simple. Nobody will stop them. You and I and all the people who celebrated that moment of pushing back, we must stop them. Are you going to be part of the team? Because if you're not, you're part of the problem. Join the team. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Make sure you never miss any of our one-on-ones. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Subscribe. It's absolutely free. Write us a 5-star review. Share the links with your friends. And don't forget, on today of all days, on the anniversary, all your Let's Go Brandon gear is available at our store, Made in America. The t-shirts, the hats, the flags, the yard signs. Treat yourself, celebrate the anniversary. Oh, and get one of our challenge coins. It's the Dr. G Stay Frosty Team MAGA. Go to SebGorkaStore.com. SebGorkaStore.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.